Is called to order. It is Wednesday, May 30th, and the last meeting of this legislative session of our House Transportation Committee. And of course, we saved the hardest for last, everybody. So,
all right.
Thank you for joining us. I'm going to go ahead and open a. Works if I have it. If I have a schedule for a public hearing and possible work session, since I've had one, do I have to open?
Yeah.
Okay.
Put out the
okay. Open a public hearing on SJR 15. And
there's no one signed up. So.
Okay, and there's no one signed up, so I will go ahead and close the public hearing on SJR 15 and open a work session on SJR 15. And
Madam Chair, members, you may remember that SJR 15 is the resolution that declares legislative support for the Columbia River Crossing Project. It recognizes that the project will require strong partnerships among all levels of government, the private sector, and citizens of Oregon and Washington. It would declare support for the continuation of a bi-state and bipartisan effort in planning, coordinating, and funding the project, and for the cooperation of the federal government in providing funding and streamlining of the regulatory process. We have received a no revenue and no fiscal impact. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. Committee?
Do you have any amendments?
No.
Would you like a motion?
I would like a motion.
Madam Chair, I move SJR 15 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Be adopted.
Recommendation.
Represent.
Right.
No, that's right.
Now that you have it right.
Good shot there. That's your word.
So, Madam Chair, I move adoption of SJR 15.
Thank you. Representative Smith has moved the adoption of SJR 15. Any discussion? Seeing.
Madam Chair, I'm all for it. I just wish it mentioned bikes in the various aspects of impacts.
And Madam Chair, not that we haven't done enough for bikers this session.
Cyclists, please.
Cyclists. Okay, bikers and cyclists. They're all the same. They all wear the same funny helmets.
Okay. Those of the opinion that SJR 15 should be adopted will vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Excuse.
Chair Byers.
Aye. The motion carries. Is there any... I have a feeling maybe we probably need a carrier on this one.
Just make Representative Reed do it.
He can make his comments.
I guess I've got Tomei written all over it myself.
She probably would have been a no vote if she did.
I think that's why Representative Butler made the suggestion.
I will carry this.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah.
Good.
There. We can close the work session. And I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 108A. And if there's anyone signed up.
Madam Chair, members, Senate Bill 108A is the measure that creates a Class C traffic violation for operation of motor trucks without a forward cross view mirror. You have four amendments before you. The first two deal with a bicycle-related amendment. The dash A5s create the offense of unsafe passing of a person operating a bicycle. That would be a Class A traffic violation. If the person fails to pass the bicyclist to the left at a safe distance is defined as the distance that is sufficient to prevent contact with the bicyclist if the person were to fall off the bike into the lane of traffic. It would not apply if the motor vehicle driver is operating in a lane separate from and adjacent to a designated bicycle lane. at a speed not greater than, and this is the change from last week, 35 instead of 30 miles per hour. You'll notice that's the main difference between the dash A2s that we discussed at the last meeting. And it also does not apply when the driver is passing a bicyclist on the right side because the person on the bike is turning left. It allows the driver of a motor vehicle to cross the center lane of the roadway to pass the bike if the oncoming lane is unobstructed, and it does require them to get back into the authorized lane as soon as practicable. And finally, it specifies that passing a bicyclist in a no-passing zone constitutes a prima facie evidence of a violation if that passing does in fact result in injury to or death of the person operating the bicycle. We have also the dash A6 amendments, which are identical language to the dash A5s, except that it removes the original bill language regarding cross-view mirrors. So it completely replaces the original bill with the language that I just described. The dash A7 amendments deal with the cross-view mirror portion of the bill. Those add an exemption for tow vehicles and vehicles registered as farm vehicles. And finally, we have the dash A8 amendments, identical to the dash A7s, with the addition of limiting applicability to motor trucks registered or titled in Oregon. We do have, on the A and gross version of the bill, it came out of no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. Okay, I have Scott Bricker, Brant Wolf, and Don Schellenberg, if y'all want to join us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Scott Bricker with the Bicycle Transportation Alliance. I'm not going to comment on the dash amendments A7 and A8. There's no requirement for cross-view mirrors on bicycles. However, the A5s and A6s are definitely part of a collaborative effort. As it was mentioned, there's a change that's been made to, I think, reflect some concerns that were stated last meeting, and we support this language. So we hope that either the dash 5s or dash 6s, which effectively do the same thing from the bicycle standpoint, are adopted. Thank you.
Thank you. Who's next?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. Don Schoenberg, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. My comments relate to the dash 7 and dash 8s. That's our issue, and we would support either one. For that matter, I don't see a whole lot of difference if you're going to have a farm-plated truck. I don't know what other states have farm-plated trucks, so I'm not sure what the Dash 8s do in that regard. But certainly the Dash 7s would be appropriate. Other than that, we don't have a position on the bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brant Wolf. I represent the Oregon Telecommunications Association. We represent providers of telephone service to operate throughout the state. As you'll note on my sign-up sheet there, we don't have a position on the underlying bill. We simply want to go on the record as, and let me back up, it's our understanding this bill doesn't really apply to utility trucks as they deliver supplies, maybe out to a work site or something like that. But after speaking to my colleagues, we thought it might be best if one of us would at least show up and appear and go on the record as stating that's our understanding. We hope that's how the bill is applied. And that's all I'm here to do today. And I'd be happy to answer any questions if anybody has any.
Okay, colleagues, any questions for any of these gentlemen? Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is registered as farm vehicles typically are farm pickups that are picking up and delivering aren't registered as farm vehicles, Don. Do you have any comment on that? One of the comments that I made earlier was that this set of mirrors mounted on the front of a pickup is going to actually impede visibility.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, if I understand the bill correctly, if you have a view of 10 feet immediately in front of the truck, then the truck would not be required to have the crossover mirrors anyway. So with pickup trucks, I believe that would be the case. That's the way I understand the bill. I was thinking the same thing earlier, and when I was reading the bill again, that came to me that pickup trucks probably would not be covered under this, simply because you would have the 10 feet of view. If that's different than that, then yeah, we've got a problem, because you're right. I mean, I have a pickup truck and it's not registered with a farm plate. The only reason for registering a pickup with a farm plate is so you can legally haul a heavier load than you can without a farm plate.
Madam Chair, just by way of follow-up, when I look at the pictures of the original handout that was provided for us, the nose of that vehicle is probably shorter than a pickup, than a farm pickup, and the visibility from that particular delivery van may not be that 10 feet. I guess my concern is that it's 10 feet from where the driver is sitting to where he hits the road, I think. And I don't think that you have that in a standard pickup, but I may be mistaken. So I come back to my original question. Pickups on farms are not typically registered as farm vehicles in the Dash A7 amendment, so I just bring that up as a question.
Thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Walker, would you like to come forward?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vicki Walker, State Senator, District 7. We are retrieving Heidi from Legislative Council to come up as well, because I think, and I went to get the statute, and you seem to be missing a book. It's important to the discussion, but I can tell you my conversations with Heidi this morning, and I can't remember her last name because I feel inappropriate.
Altmaier.
Oh, thank you. Using her first name. Motor truck. The bill addresses motor trucks. A motor truck, as defined in Section 801.355 of the statute, is a truck that is designed primarily or used for loads other than passengers, Representative Butler. So it doesn't matter if it's a pickup, because that's not a motor truck designed for anything other than a passenger. So that bill is that sort of truck is exempt already under the bill.
A pickup truck?
A pickup truck, because it is designed for a passenger. Oh, thank you. I can read that to you. Thank you, Mr. Costanos. 355. Motor truck means a motor vehicle that is primarily designed or used for carrying loads other than passengers. A pickup truck is designed to carry a passenger and other loads, but it's primarily designed for carrying a passenger. We simply have a pickup truck because we haul off our yard debris or anything else, which we did this weekend. We hauled a lot of tree limbs off to the recycle place. So that's the difference. The bill is very narrow. If you remember that it talks about motor trucks, and also that you must be engaged in commercial delivery. I appreciate, Madam Chair, that you had, there's Heidi, that you had I think your amendment was the Dash 7, because mine is the Dash 8. Heidi, could you join me up here, please? Thank you. I was just explaining to the committee the definition of a motor truck that you brought to my attention and reminded me about this bill. And a pickup truck would not be defined as a motor truck because it is primarily designed to carry passengers, correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Heidi Altmaier with Legislative Council. Senator Walker, yes, you are correct, because motor trucks are for the design. Are designed for primarily carrying loads other than passengers. So your pickup truck, your family SUV, your Suburban, those would not be covered because those would be primarily designed to carry you and your family around.
And Madam Chair, as I was saying, I thank you for getting the Dash 7 amendments drafted. I forgot and called Heidi in a panic this morning. And we exempt the tow vehicles, and we also exempt the vehicles registered as farm vehicles, so I do believe they were already protected, but we just wanted to make sure they were taken care of. The Dash 8 that I have in my hand, also, I had a conversation with Ms. Altmaier this morning about whether we should limit this to vehicles that are registered and titled in the state of Oregon. so as not to interfere with interstate commerce. I'll let Ms. Altmaier discuss that, but many states have different laws about, and Mr. Costales could even answer this, have different laws about what's required on a vehicle. In fact, some states will allow for pretty heavy tenting on windows, but Oregon will not. And there's mud flap issues. Some states have them, different requirements than we do. You don't get ticketed because your vehicle comes in from out of state and it has something on it that is not appropriate to Oregon. Would that be correct, Ms. Altmaier? Don't let me misrepresent.
That's correct. That.
Thank you.
Chair.
Yeah, please
correct.
Answer for me.
Chair, members of the committee, the things, the questions you want to keep in mind when you're considering the interstate commerce are these. One, does the law rationally relate to a legitimate state interest? I guess in this case that would be safety. If you're going to implement this law, does that, and you're doing it for the purposes of safety, are those things related to each other? Secondly, you also want to keep in mind whether or not, given that that's the case, does it present an unconstitutional burden on interstate commerce? Generally, the Supreme Court has been fairly liberal in its protection of the states and allowing them to implement laws that protect safety. However, there have been cases such in Illinois. There was a case where Illinois required mud flaps, but the mud flaps then weren't acceptable in other states, so the trucks are having to change the mud flaps depending on what state they were in, and that, even though the intent was safety, that created an unconstitutional burden on interstate commerce. To my knowledge, there aren't states that have any problems or qualms with forward cross-view mirrors that would present a problem for the motor trucks that have those on their trucks as they're traveling through interstate commerce. And it's my understanding that this will really primarily affect delivery trucks, and most of those will be traveling in intrastate commerce. And for the companies that do have trucks that are crossing state lines, because that is something that they must do to, of course, participate in interstate commerce, those trucks will be few. And because of the limited number. Now, that's not to say those companies might not have an issue and they would have to then come to court and, one, prove that the law is not rationally related to a state interest, and, two, that the law creates an unconstitutional burden on state commerce. Depends on if they want to pay the attorneys to do that. So.
Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Heidi, are we aware of how many states would require these presently on delivery vehicles, such as the UPS delivery van that was in question here? How many states require front view mirrors presently, so that we're aware that if these are coming across from Washington or Idaho or California, that they're already in interstate traffic?
Chair, Representative Butler, I am not aware of the number of states that currently do require that.
So just one follow-up in that regard then. So a delivery truck which is based in Idaho, which makes deliveries in eastern Oregon, would they be required then as they come into eastern Oregon to attach these mirrors?
They would, or they could pay whatever the fine is for not having them. The same as though someone from Arizona comes up with tinted windows and they discover that Oregon is much stricter when it comes to tinted windows.
Right. Madam Chair.
Or any other equipment or lighting.
Yes.
Just to clarify, would not the -8 amendments, though, address that concern, the truck that's registered in Idaho?
It may address that. I had a brief conversation with someone from the Department of Justice this afternoon. She wasn't sure if that would reach far enough or how to best reach it. So I have to say, honestly, Chair Representative Buckley, I don't know.
Thank you.
All right. Madam Chair, I would indicate that my staff did some research and sent over a video for you all. I did take a look at it myself. If you had a chance to review it, you can see that there were over 60 deaths last year of children who have been run over by a vehicle moving in the front, SUVs, other vehicles. So I'm not advocating we put cross-view mirrors on all these vehicles, but I just want to reiterate that this is a safety issue. It's a safety issue particularly on these trucks, but also for cars, and they really need to stop and get around and take a look at what's behind them or in front of them, because it's a very tragic thing to lose your child this way. And I would also state that, I had this bill last legislative session. There was a hearing on it. There was a bill this session, and then I had to stick it in another bill. And I would tell the chair and the members of the committee that never once has anyone from the trucking industry or the Farm Bureau or anyone connected in any way to this bill have they ever asked to see me or talk to me about this piece of legislation. So I'm really unhappy when we have something that's out there that's been two sessions, and then suddenly they find that the bill's alive and all they want to do is try to kill it or muck it up, rather than coming to the drafter of the bill and saying, how can we work on this? How can we work on this together? So, you know, when it gets to that point, I just actually don't pay attention to people at that point because they're not playing the game fair, if you want to call it a game. I don't call it a game. What I call it here is good legislation about safety and protecting our children. And this, as Ms. Altmaier says, is this a legislative state interest? And I do believe this is a legislative interest. It is one about safety. And if people had concerns and wanted exemptions and wanted this and wanted that, then they sure should have, heck, come see me a long time before yesterday and today, and yet they still haven't come to see me. So we're doing the best that we can with amendments to this bill with people laying in the weeds. All I know, Madam Chair and members of the committee, is I have a constituent whose child didn't see past her sixth birthday because she was run over by a delivery truck. And I don't want to see that happen to another child. And it's not the first case in Oregon of a child being run over by a vehicle. There was a child who lost their life when a school bus ran over them, and that's when school buses started having to have cross-view mirrors. So this is one about safety. I think we've addressed your issues. I think Ms. Altmaier reminding us what a motor truck means resolves the concerns you raised, Representative Smith, about delivering newspapers in the neighborhood. I don't think any of these rigs that go out in the neighborhood are going to have to put cross-view mirrors on. So I think this is a very narrow bill, but I think it addresses the safety issue that we need in this state.
Thank you.
And Madam Chair, I'd be happy with either the -7 or the -8, whatever the committee chooses.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So, Troy Costales, would you like to come up? And Bob Russell. Any other questions for Ms. Altmaier?
Madam Chair, just I would like Heidi or someone to be able to tell us before the end of the day how many other states are requiring this, because I am not seeing any vehicles coming in from Washington or from Idaho, commercial delivery vehicles, or from California that are requiring these mirrors. And the testimony that was just given to us indicates that Suburbans and these other kinds of vehicles are also causing deaths. And I don't know, you know, when you take a good idea, how far you take it until everyone has to have these kinds of mirrors, which in fact do obscure the vision of oncoming traffic. So I would like to know how many other states are requiring these and why we don't see them coming into Oregon on a regular basis. Thank you.
Ms. Altmaier, you don't have an answer to that question,
right? I don't have an answer to that. I'm very sorry.
So if there are no other questions for her, I'll go ahead and let her go. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Maybe you do.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Troy Costales, the Administrator of the Safety Division for the Oregon Department of Transportation. First, to represent Butler's question, I cannot answer it. just finding out if there's any other states that have this requirement or not. I can't testify to the base of the bill relationship to the cross view. My office would be the one very likely responsible for doing the rule setting and the rulemaking on the cross view mirrors and the ability to see something within 10 feet of the front of the vehicle from the driver position. We would try to keep this fairly simple. We envision something that is around self-certifying. I would be adding this responsibility to somebody that already has two program areas they are responsible for. There's no FTE or any requests in relationship to the fiscal of this budget. So the only way to do that is self-certification, something that they would, some sort of checklist or something that they would go through from the seated position of the vehicle to indicate that they saw a package or a box or something within 10 feet, and they can put that in the glove box in order to show that they're meeting the intent of what the legislation is. And as was mentioned in earlier testimony on this bill, the estimate is somewhere between 22 and 23,000 vehicles, depending upon, well, that's based on Oregon registrations, is what we're talking about. If that is the selection chosen by the committee, that's how many vehicles we estimate are out there that probably would end up having to have the certification done. If it expands beyond Oregon borders, and that number then would go up. But that for the piece for our responsibility related to the rule, I just wanted to pass that on to the committee. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd be more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I do have one. I don't know if you've had a chance to get a good look at the A5s and 6s, and wondering if in your mind there are any little things that might pop up that should concern us. Or
Madam Chair, the A5s and A6s in relationship to giving vehicles the ability to pass safely around bicyclists are identical. The only difference is 5 adds it to the cross-view mirror, whereas 6, it would be all that is left over. The cross-view mirror piece would come out, and it would just be the bicyclist and the passing piece. The one piece in this that is going to be interesting to do is, and very often this will likely fall to my office as well, is the driver education, the information piece to the bicycling community as well as to the driving community. These are pretty technical. They're very certain situations, certain rules and regulations. And we found, for instance, with provisional licensing with teenagers, you have a captured audience, as we both have experienced recently. You can convey those details because they're there and they're having to learn about the license and everything. This is much broader. You're talking millions of potential drivers and millions of potential bicyclists. So I try to get my head around what am I going to do in relationship to an informational campaign on this and what it means, since that's part of what I'll have to do on the implementation side if this was to pass. The other is, and I had mentioned this to Mr. Bricker, I'm a little worried about, if I could take you to the A5s, page 2, line 11, it talks about where as an operator of a vehicle, you can cross into the center line in a no-passing zone in order to safely pass a bicyclist. The piece that I don't see in part 2 that I do see in part 1 is the bicycle lane. Now, if we think this through implementation, how often is this going to occur? Not very, and there's already some exemptions in law to be able to pass in those situations as a driver anyway. So I don't know how much of a barrier this is, no pun intended there, but it's I don't see the situation arising that much. What I worry about is the opposing traffic. And if something was to occur and there was a vehicle crash, does that piece that's missing the bicycle lane all of a sudden enter into a potential lawsuit, and that as a matter of law we have said you can pass in a no-passing zone and go over the center line to avoid a bicyclist, but if the bicyclist is in a bicycle lane, should we be giving the driver the ability to cross over in a no-passing zone? And it's, like I said, it's a small situation, it won't occur all that much, and is something potentially for interim session or next session if it ends up being where something does arise out of it. Very fortunately, we only average 8 or 9 deaths of bicyclists in the state per year. It's a very low number. So this arising and becoming part of a lawsuit, I don't know what the chances of that. I would think they'd be pretty small.
Thank you. I'm not sure I'd say it was a low number, but yes, Representative Butler.
Particularly if you know one of them.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I had a question for Troy relative to the 22 to 23,000 vehicles in Oregon, which would require these cross-view mirrors. It would then be the Department of Transportation's position that they would also then communicate to the law enforcement community that vehicles coming into the state of Oregon to make a delivery from any other adjacent state, or a rented vehicle coming in to make a delivery from any adjacent state would then be required to also have a temporary set of these crossview mirrors then? Is that what would happen?
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, if you adopt the A8s, that will not come into play because the A8s indicate registered within the state of Oregon. If you were to adopt the A7s or the bill as it's currently in its current form, you would end up being a motor vehicle for delivering and would not be able to see within the first 10 feet of the front of the vehicle. So it's not going to be every vehicle coming in. It's going to be ones that don't have an unobstructed view within 10 feet of the front of the vehicle. We would set the rule up and the form checklist type of thing as our hope that those rental companies could already do that ahead of time, and it's already in the glove box, that they can see within 10 feet. If they can't see within 10 feet, then you are looking at a requirement for the equipment. For the first part of your question, which is the outreach to law enforcement and to courts, the safety division holds lots of training sessions for law enforcement, also for judiciary and other people. Law enforcement itself, state police does a lot of work within their organization. The Sheriff's Association and the Chiefs Association also do outreach within their communities after every session to talk about law changes or things like that. So it's common practice to get that information out to those different communities.
And a follow-up question regarding fiscal. So any ideas, the fiscal cost to implement and to train the millions of drivers and bicyclists in this state?
Madam Chair and Representative Butler, I get faced with this every session when there are different laws that are passed about how to get the word out and does it rise to the level of a mass media campaign? Is it something that we want to try and do? Independent mailings, do we use press releases? Depending upon all the different things that change every session, we try to take it upon ourselves to do some sort of outreach and education on the laws. Sometimes it grabs attention in the media, sometimes it doesn't, and we try our best to make sure that as many different changes made every session get out the door as we can.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick question. Do you offhand know how many, ballpark, how many SUV pickups we have on the highways in Oregon?
Madam Chair and Representative Smith, I do not, and I don't have anything with me here in the room that would even tell me that.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Russell. I'm president of the Oregon Trucking Associations. Last time I was here, Representative Smith asked about UPS's safety record. So I thought I would provide some information for you. UPS is a $47.5 billion a year company. They have almost 500,000 employees worldwide. They're celebrating their 100-year anniversary this year. And they were founded in Seattle, Washington. The first document that I provided to you is a fact sheet about UPS safe drivings that came off of their website. And they've got 103,500 drivers worldwide. They're going to spend this year alone $38 million on safety training and equipment. They have developed most of their own safety programs, which have been very successful and have been adopted by numerous state agencies, local agencies, and other companies. Matter of fact, Seattle, Washington is using some of the UPS training modules for their police officers. So UPS has a very strong commitment to safety, and the next document is a press release where they were just awarded the Green Cross for Safety by the National Safety Council in 2007, which is an incredibly high honor and recognition of the safety of their operations. And the last document that I provide for you is a screen print from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration's SafeStat program. And SafeStat is an algorithm that is used by the motor carrier enforcement folks to select trucks and trucking companies for safety enforcement action. When you look at the accidents safety evaluation area. Anything less than 75 is acceptable. And one thing to keep in mind with accidents in this particular system, they record every accident that a trucking company is involved in, whether the trucking company is at fault or not. UPS's number in the accident area is 3.29. I think that's the lowest I've ever seen, quite frankly. On the driver's side, it's 15.34. That would be violations for hours of service, those kinds of things. On the vehicle side, it's 13.35. They have never had an audit so that you're not seeing anything under the safety management area, nor have they done a total score because they've never had an audit. So, I mean, this demonstrates, I think, that UPS has a very, very strong commitment to safety. And not only a commitment to safety, but they are very, very safe. If not the safest company, trucking company in America, they are certainly in the top group. When I look at all of these amendments and sort of think back to our previous testimony, I'm still very concerned about the cross-view mirror piece. And, you know, when Senator Walker was up here talking, she talked about a lot of these accidents happen with automobiles and Suburbans and those kinds of things, which is in fact true. The vast majority of rollover accidents occur in neighborhoods, and it's the family car or whatever that has them. And that the thing that is critical is that people, before they back out of their driveway or before they get in their car and pull forward, they make sure that the path is unobstructed. And I believe that to be true. And I think that UPS has said that their belief is that's the safest thing to do also, and their drivers are trained to do that. If this bill had an option of cross-view mirrors or checking the path to make sure that it was clear, and it was left up to the operator to determine which they thought was in the best interest of safety, and there is a difference, because the freight driver, as you may recall, gets out of the vehicle and has the opportunity to inspect the front of the vehicle, where a bus driver does not. They stay in the vehicle, and I believe that is why the federal government requires the cross-view mirrors on all school buses. It makes absolute sense to me. Without that option, it's difficult for me to support the underlying bill and the amendments. Now, to the bicycle amendment, I believe that with Troy's efforts and providing education, that it will, in fact, improve safety on our highways, and I would support that. And the amendments that I would support are the Dash 6 amendments, which would replace the underlying bill. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
I think the one thing I would ask, a question has been asked about whether any other states require these, and do you have that information or not?
Madam Chair, in talking with the manufacturer's representative here in Oregon, they were only aware of the federal requirement for school buses. They were not aware of any other state requiring cross-view mirrors on freight vehicles.
Okay. Representative Butler.
Thank you. And you did ask the question, but we've got these vehicles from this company operating in 150 different nations and 50 different states and several of the territories. Any indication that these mirrors are required on the UPS vehicles in any of those several hundred locations?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, according to the company representatives, they are not required to have cross-view mirrors any place. And in every instance, their practice is to have the driver walk in front of the vehicle before they get in the driver's seat and take off.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Buckley.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Ress, I would just like to push back just slightly. First, on the point that we might be the first, then we're talking about a child in Oregon who was killed and we're addressing what we can in the state of Oregon, I am totally comfortable with addressing situations in our state. I just spent 2 hours in education talking about doing fingerprint checks on volunteers in schools to protect children in our state. So to me, that I'm not sure why that is a pertinent issue. And in terms of a opt-out for being able to walk around a truck, we already have it. And that is the result of the opt-out provision of being able to walk around a truck. Senator Walker has presented information in terms of the number of fatalities, a growing number of fatalities, similar to the way that we've addressed fatal back overs because of an increase in fatalities. We've been providing information on that score in terms of the fatal front overs increase in the past several years. So again, some of these, I'll give it, just want to give a chance to respond to any of that.
Sure.
The idea that we might be the first, I don't think is relevant to this, and the idea that a voluntary system is working, again, given the same kind of standards we were talking about in terms of sexual predators in our schools, I would want to apply that here and say, you know, we want our kids to be safe.
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, all good questions. I'm not concerned that we would be the first either, quite frankly. If truly we could demonstrate that we were enhancing public safety, whether we're the first or not, I'm for that. That's the number one goal of my association. Yes, there was a tragic accident. There's no question about that and no argument whatsoever. But there have also been tragic accidents with school buses that are equipped with cross-view mirrors. So from my perspective, requiring cross-view mirrors on freight trucks is not demonstrated to improve safety, and that is my concern.
Can I just follow up? There is actually information on a fatal front over with a school bus in the state of Oregon or in the United States?
Madam Chair, Representative Buckley, at the time that I testified before, I indicated to you that since 1997, there have in fact been 14 accidents.
Correct. I just don't know if these are fatal front overs for school buses.
One was a fatal, and several of them had ranged from major to moderate to minor injuries.
And just to clarify, the one that was fatal was from a front over accident?
You know, that's my understanding.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 108A and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 728. And we'll go back to the other one. Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Senate Bill 728A repeals the sunset on provisions allowing qualified persons that have vision between 2080 and 2200 who use a bioptic lens device to drive with additional training and under restricted conditions. It deletes the restriction on such low vision drivers that currently limits them to roads with speed limits of 45 miles per hour or less. It would allow for nighttime driving for low vision bioptic lens drivers, but only if a doctor certifies every 2 years that the person can safely drive at night and if the driver obtains additional training for night driving. And finally, it sunsets the nighttime driving allowance in 4 years. You have before you now the -A5 amendments. Those amendments delete new provisions allowing a vehicle to be operated at night by these permit holders. It reinstates current law with respect to limiting bioptic lens users to driving only on highways with a designated speed limit not greater than 45 miles per hour. And you'll notice in the amendment also, since Section 2 is deleted, the amendment also repeats other current restrictions of allowing operation of a motor vehicle during daylight hours and when the permit holder is using a bioptic telescopic lens. On the Angross version of the measure, we've received a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Judith. And I'll go ahead and ask Senate President Courtney, Senator Atkinson, and Senator George, if you guys all would like to come up. And you can decide who gets to go first.
I go first?
For the record, Madam Chair, I am Senator Jason Atkinson, State Senator from Southern Oregon. And I bring to you today a bill that we've talked about before, and so thank you very much for having a hearing on it again. There's two, you're all very familiar with the bill, so let me briefly run through the bill and the compromise that was made in the Senate and then address, I think, the larger issue that's before us. The issue that was compromised in the Senate was in 2003, good Senator Peter Courtney and I passed this original bill, which mirrored the legislation that was surrounding us in the United States, namely California, Washington, and Idaho. With the time sunset on it to say if it works, great, and if it doesn't work, we'll get rid of it. Well, as you know from the testimony of Mr. Aaron Matthews, I think is the best spokesman for people with this condition, they took it and took the word privilege to its highest form, and not only did they meet all of the education requirements, but they far exceeded the safety, the concern, and found out it was a very limited number of Oregonians who were helped by this bill. So they brought together pieces of legislation that would take off the sunset and introduce extremely more rigorous education requirements and a doctor's sign-off for another test, which would be limited nighttime. So what was compromised in the Senate, not the best of their intentions, but I think the best piece of public policy probably coming from both sides of this bill, which is now before you, which keeps the sunset for the new portions. The future legislature would view that, beefs up the doctor's certification portion of the bill, and then also addresses the success that has been made. That's the bill. Here's the politics. Just as it was when Peter, President Courtney and I were working this bill in the Senate the first time, we had the problem of people afraid of, well, you're just letting blind people drive. And the politics behind, well, what are going to happen if you say you voted for this? And what we did is we found it, not only did we push and push and push in both of our capacities, but we also found we had to do an education element to the media to say that these were serious issue. It affected a small number of Oregonians. And in the words of Representative Gilman, by George, we're here to help a few number of people if we can. And so we did, and it succeeded, and there was no negative campaigning or anything else after we passed it. And as you recall from my testimony before all of you, this single bill had the greatest failure, I think 59-0, no votes, when it first was before the House. One person, the beloved, the honorable chair of this committee, changed her vote for immediate reconsideration 24 hours later. It passed 60-0. Which was, I think, the greatest turnaround. So I understand the concerns, both policy and part of the end of sessionness that we find ourselves in. But at the core of it is about 20 Oregonians who take this very seriously as a privilege and have shown that they can exceed the expectations.
Thank you.
Glasses?
That's right.
My name is Peter Courtney, and I'm a state senator, and I represent portions of Salem, Dervis, and Salem. I live at 2925 Island View Drive, Northeast. Chair Beyer and Vice Chairs Gilman, Tomei, and members of the House Transportation Committee, it's an honor and privilege to be here. I told the good Senator Jason Atkinson, I look out upon you, there's more people in this committee than there are in the state Senate. So I'm a little nervous. I'm not used to testifying in front of groups this large. You've heard about how 4 years ago he and I introduced this legislation, he on the behalf of a very young man who had a condition, I on behalf of Marla Runyon, who was a world-class female runner at the University of Oregon and also Olympic participant who would run middle-distance races with the best women runners in the world and be able to navigate the track in those races and did extraordinarily well. The thing that you need to know is that this was not a thing that we just threw together. The applicants to get a license must be examined by a vision specialist who must certify the driver meets the standards for the program. The driver must also complete a training program, has also passed a driver's test, a DMV test. And then to maintain the license, unlike us, the drivers must be examined by an eye specialist and retake the driver's DMV test every 2 years. But that's not all. They could not drive at night, and they also could only drive under certain speed conditions. So all those conditions existed. And there are 35 states today that have this kind of legislation. Interestingly, 22 of the 35 do allow night driving, because we have asked this time that you remove the sunset for the day driving, but also we start to experiment with the night driving. Now, according to ODOT, there are currently 12 drivers with these licenses, and there are four currently in that training program that I referred to. During the pilot program, there has been one minor accident and two traffic violations. This is a pretty remarkable statistics, given what I think is given the conditions of these individuals. Now I'm simply going to speak personally, and then I'll turn it over to the good sir and to Larry George. You know, I'll be at a social event tonight. The Senate Republicans, I don't know if they know it or not, have been good enough to invite me to a little event. But the thing I have to be aware of is if you're on my left, I have to be very careful, because I will run into you if you're on my left. As I speak to you, I can see all over here very well, but I cannot see Jason Atkinson. And the reason is that as I was walking over the 97 sessions to come to this very room, because I served in this room many times in the House Judiciary Committee, something started to happen to my eyes as I came across that part of the chamber, looked down the chambers. And I thought something was just messing around inside my contact lenses. And I dismissed it. But then as the day wore on, something seemed to be strange, and I went to my ophthalmologist the next day, and he said, Peter, we've got to get you into surgery very quickly, because you have an attached retina, and if we don't repair that, Peter, you will be permanently and totally blind in an eye. My whole life changed. I went nuts. I went crazy. They lost control of me. It was a very bad experience. And the point is that while they saved my vision, I lost some of my peripheral vision. I live with, as I say, I cannot see the two senators on either side of me as I speak to you. I cannot see very much of that over here. I can't even see my hand. Over here, I can see everything. I have very good vision. So what does that mean? When I'm driving on I-5 and I want to move into any left lanes, I have to take extraordinary measures to make sure I don't make a mistake. This has been since 1997. I do take those. I will never rely just on mirrors. I will go out of my way to constantly check my left, because I know that about myself. That is something I live with. I'm not complaining to you. My point I'm trying to make to you is, there's one of my fellow neighbors that lives next to me. He has a total eye that's gone. And we've talked about how he drives, and he drives big, heavy equipment. He has one eye, and he told me what he constantly does. It's like alerting himself when he gets in that car. My opinion on these individuals that have this situation in their life, they are aware. More so than everyday drivers, they have these conditions. And in some way, I would suggest they might even be safer, and you don't have to accept that. Watch me get an accident now on my left tonight. But the fact is, I think people who have these kinds of impairments, like I have, we do compensate. We constantly remind myself. I can honestly tell you that even any street I drive, and even tonight, I'll be nervous. I don't like people on my left, because I do run into a lot of people on my left, and I constantly say, I'm sorry, and I don't want to explain to them. But my point I'm trying to say to you is, this legislation, while it may seem outrageous when you first hear about it, it has been tried, it has been proven, and I just want to give you that personal experience that maybe that would convince you as well, that these people are aware of this situation they have in their bodies, and they're aware of this device, and I think they themselves go overboard to make sure they do not cause accidents to themselves, particularly to others. Thank you, Chair, and other members of the committee, for allowing me to enter this, both the written testimony and these verbal statements.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Larry George, State Senator from Senate District 13. I sit on the Senate Transportation Committee when the bill came for me. I laughed because I thought to myself, how in the world we pass this piece of legislation? I sat through a great deal of testimony on the bill and was quite moved, not only by the science of what I heard in our lengthy discussion over there, but in the testimony we heard from a large number of folks of the group that have these licenses. And I'm not sure, I brought with me testimony from one person, I'm not sure made it over. I don't know if Tamara Bush Johnson was able to submit testimony to your committee, but it's very, very impressive of her son, which I'll leave with you. What struck me is something that the rest of us sometimes take for granted, which is freedom of movement. And this ability for these group of Oregonians to have freedom of movement is incredibly, you do have it, great. To have freedom of movement is so very important. And so I reluctantly listened as I heard, I guess, what you would say is their story. But then as we heard the science, I was amazed at some of the things. Like, for instance, with one of the restrictions, albinism, they actually at times see better at night than they do during the day. But the way the statutes are written, it precludes them from being able to drive at night. And some of these restrictions really seem ridiculous. As the two senators to my right brought the amendments forward, I honestly never thought I'd be either voting for the amendments or for the bill. But I was very moved by the testimony and moved by the science that we heard from the testimony of the doctors. And I just wanted to come over here and just let you know that I had some of the same reluctancy, and I'm sure that many of you are. But the reason why the Senate committee approved the bill as it was drafted in the amendments is because I think we felt like the Department of Transportation really was taking the steps necessary, that then there was enough protections in the bills, and this was a small enough group of people that really have been incredibly responsible with the opportunity that we have given them. And understand, we're talking about people's freedom of movement here. And I think the protections that were put in there by the two senators to my right really put the sideboards on that made me comfortable about taking that next step. I wasn't an advocate for the bill, as I said. It's just that I heard you guys were having a committee meeting. And I just want to let you know that you may have not been able to have as an extensive a testimony as we did. But when we had a large number of people that were talking about it, it was really moving about the importance of this piece of legislation to a small group of citizens in our state who have been incredibly responsible with the program that we've already put in place. And I felt like, and I think our whole committee did, that they had earned the next step, which is to give them that next pilot program to see if we couldn't expand the program even more to give them more freedom in their movement. So I just want to let you know kind of my personal experience from sitting, dealing with this bill in committee and my attitude coming in. And I really urge you to consider approving the bill, and I understand there's some amendments to roll it back to what the bill originally said. I would say definitely the bill has to move, but I would strongly urge you to consider the way we amended it, expanding the program and giving this group of citizens even more opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Madam Chair, I would just add one thing, if it'd be all right. Good Senator President mentioned that there was one minor accident and two speeding tickets. I do know that both speeding tickets were by the same individual, and he told his mom it would not happen again.
I would have, too. No questions?
No questions.
Seeing none. Thank you, gentlemen, for coming in. Okay, so I think I opened a public hearing, but I better say it is a work session, since I guess I didn't have a work session. And colleagues, we have the original bill as it came from the Senate, and we also have an amendment, and I haven't really heard Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, what's your pleasure on the amendment?
Well, I'd like to make sure that we have are able to keep the program, which we would need to deal with the sunset. I hate saying here that I have concerns about the amount of support, and maybe you can give me a little. I would send the bill out the way it is if I thought that we could garner the support on the floor to pass it. So if
may I give you a
have
motion
any
then?
Comment, if you, yeah.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 728A to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Any discussion? Representative Smith moves Senate Bill 728A to the floor with the due pass recommendation. So any discussion now?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I would just support the motion. I am also impressed with the fact that this has been defined so clearly. I think there's safeguards involved in terms of the test that being made. I think it's far beyond the test to prove that I can drive. So I think this is a group of people that actually have worked hard to get this privilege. I think they respect the privilege, and I think we should respect them.
Thank you. Any other discussion?
Very quickly, Madam Chair. Yes. I was originally reluctant on this bill, but when I heard the compelling testimony of President Courtney, especially the fact that he has difficulty seeing to the left, I thought this was a good bill for me to support.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Anyone else here? Okay, we have a motion to send Senate Bill 728A to the floor with a due pass. Those who are in favor will vote aye, and those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Byer.
Aye. The motion carries. And since Representative Buckley spoke so, I'm going to mix them both up now, spoke so eloquently about the bill, we'll
I have the pleasure
ask
thing.
Him to
I would
carry
be
it. And I'll close the work session on Senate Bill 728A and open a work session on Senate Bill 108A. Colleagues, I will take a motion.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Gilman.
I move the dash A6 amendments to 108.
Representative Gilman has moved the dash 6 amendments to House Senate Bill 108A. Discussion. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, I just want to share a quick experience with you. This weekend, my teenage son was in our big Suburban, a full-size Suburban, and we were pulling out of a parking lot, and he instantly jumped in, started the car, and off he went. And thinking about earlier testimony we had last week, I asked him to stop the car, pull over, put it in park, turn it off, and I took our little 4-year-old daughter out, and I walked her to the back of the Suburban and started at the very back, and I said, "Son, Grant, can you see her?" "No." "Took her back 5 feet. Can you see her?" "No." "Took her back 10 feet. Can you see her?" The answer was no. "Took her 15 feet, approximate." The answer was no. It wasn't until about 17 feet that my son, and he's a little bit small in size, could see an average size 4-year-old. I then took her to the front. Started out right at the grill. The answer was no. It was literally about 12 to 14 feet before my son could see the top of her head. And colleagues, the reason I raise this issue is I think a tragedy occurred. But I'm not sure the current bill in its current form is the solution. I think there's a greater concern out there, and that is just drivers being careful and safe when they do drive. And we heard testimony from Mr. Russell that UPS has an immaculate driving record, and I think that, in my view, that showed that this was a tragedy, not a pattern of events. And I think these tragedies can occur in any type of vehicle. I definitely know they can occur now in a Suburban or a full-size pickup, and I would just hope all Oregonians would recognize that. But at the same time, I'm not sure that we can legislate safety in all circumstances.
Thank you. Representative Buckley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd have to agree with my colleague. We can't legislate safety in all circumstances. It does seem that given the evidence that there are increasing number of front over accidents, given the pressure that are on commercial delivery drivers to make their deliveries quickly in neighborhoods that are crowded, given the fact that the reason we have the front view mirrors on school buses isn't from accident. It isn't because someone's had a whim. It's because it's absolutely clear that children are endangered from vehicles where the drivers can't see them in front of the grill. This, to me, is a amendment I'm going to oppose because it deletes the section on the front cross view mirrors, and I think we're doing a disservice to our children. I think this is something that can be done. I think UPS does have a great record. They also spend millions of dollars on safety every year. This is not an extraordinary cost. I would be proud if our state was the first to actually take this extra step to see if we can decrease the number of front rollover deaths of children in our state. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate the impassioned plea given by Representative Buckley. My concern is that there was never any evidence presented that this extra set of mirrors on the front of some of these vehicles, many of which mirrors would have to be mounted low because of the front of the vehicle not being up high like they are on a school bus, but being down low and in front of the vehicle could actually impair safety in certain circumstances. Never did we hear testimony relative to the possibility, and I've driven vehicles with mounted mirrors for the purposes of camp trailers and other kinds of vehicles, and those are most obstructive to certain portions of your vision. So I am concerned about any attempts that we're trying to make to legislate away human error. It's difficult to legislate to all circumstances of human existence, and again, I am concerned not just about the fact that this could happen, I think Representative Smith's example is an excellent example. That is that untrained, non-professional, ordinary garden variety drivers have no experience in getting around and walking around the vehicle, and they would be exempt in the large SUVs, in the pickups, in the farm pickups, and other vehicles. So I am concerned about the discussion that does not bring into the fact that on these far front-mounted lower hooded vehicles that they would have a series of mirrors up there, which in effect can block view of an individual that might be in a certain path at a certain time, and could then become the subject of an accident and actually enhance and increase the numbers of front rollover problems.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Madam Chair, at the risk of, don't want to belabor the point, but just to respond briefly, I do understand Representative Butler's comments, but we didn't have any testimony that there was a problem with front view mirrors properly installed with the wide variety of front view mirrors available. I watched the UPS guy go down our block. We have a fairly not heavy traffic block in Ashland, and the drivers, both FedEx and UPS, that come down, they come down quickly and make their deliveries, and not once have I seen a driver do the walk around of the vehicle. We have kids on our block. I think about this, and in terms of educating the public and in terms of the other type of vehicles that members of the general public drive, it could possibly be that the use of front view mirrors would be seen as something, well, school buses have them, delivery trucks have them. Why do they have them? Because there's a danger. Maybe this is a way we can increase the awareness of the danger of these vehicles where you can't see the ground in front of you.
And Madam Chair, I don't want to just prolong this for the purpose of discussion, but I also would say that there's a certain expectation that our children will recognize that, and small youngsters will recognize that they're not safe in every circumstance around every piece of equipment. And I think it's incumbent upon us as parents and grandparents and adults to make sure that children understand that certain times they can't be seen, not even in front of the shopping cart. So.
Thank you, Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for being out so much to this committee and to the audience. But the Dash 6 amendments have nothing to do with the original bill, right? So what we're looking at is what had been discussed earlier about bicycles. Mm-hmm. And has there been testimony on that, Madam Chair?
Some testimony. We did have some testimony, obviously, in our last meeting, right. And then a little more today on the amendments.
Scott Ricker, the
right, and I know that at the last meeting, TriMet had raised a couple concerns, and they're here if anyone had any questions, but they're okay with the language in the dash six. Not that they're taking a stand on the entire bill, but they don't have concerns with that language anymore.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just clarify, the dash six does delete, though, the first part of the bill. Am I correct?
Yes.
So it does delete the...
Yes. And I'll just have very mixed feelings about this because I do know that this is, you know, could be considered an isolated incident, but I also think that I don't know that this is an extraordinary measure to start working on safety for our kids. So at this point in time, we'll we'll go ahead and those of the opinion that the dash A6s should dated 5/29/07 should be adopted will vote aye, and those opposed no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
No.
Representative Butler.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Beyer.
No. The dash sixes are adopted. And do I have a motion? Any more motions? We don't adopt anything else here.
I move that Senate Bill 108 go to the floor with a due pass recommendation, as amended. That's an A6.
Thank you. Representative Gilman moves Senate Bill 108A to the floor, as amended, with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none, those of the opinion, Senate Bill 108A, as amended, should be reported to the floor. We'll vote aye. Those opposed, no. And the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Buckley.
Aye.
Representative Butler.
No.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Reed.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Tomei.
Aye.
Chair Beyer.
No. I know. Motion carries. Do I have a carrier, Representative Gilman? Thank you. And yes, I was just going to close the work session on Senate Bill 108A.
Madam Chair, may I be permitted to vote on SJR 15, please?
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended so that Representative Tomei have the opportunity to vote on SJR 15.
Thank you. Representative Butler requests unanimous consent. The rules be suspended to allow Representative Tomei to vote on SJR 15. Any objection? Seeing none. Here, Representative Tomei, how do you vote?
I vote aye.
Ah. Well, we could have given it to her. Thank you. And committee, I want to, before you all leave, I want to thank you for all your hard work on this committee. I really enjoyed working with you. And and Judith, she has been great. And this is our last meeting. I'll remind you that we have gotten an invitation from the Oregon Highway Users Alliance for a goodbye party for all House and Senate members who care about transportation, which is on June 6th at the Phoenix Grand Hotel. A week from today.
June 6th?
June 6th.
I
know. And it would be my intent, hopefully, to have a party, but I have a feeling it's going to be challenging to find a time to do that, but we'll work on it, committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you again for all your hard work.
Thank you.
And thank everybody out there.
So.